Welcome back, comedy fans, to an all-new comedy at the Carlson Cast. Get more information and subscribe at carlsoncast.com. Today's episode number 112, very special with Miss Tammy Pescatelli, everybody. We're very excited. Today's episode is, of course, brought to you by Sapori Cafe and Catering. Hey, Chef Joe from Sapori is teaming up with other Rochester favorites for the Roses Are Dead pop-up dinner at Silk Pub on February 17th. Three chefs, seven courses. Get more information on Facebook and Instagram at Sapori Rochester. Also, Three Heads Brewing, the makers of Rochester's favorite beer. Do good things and always be kind. Now it's your very special host. Joe Rogan's endorsed him for nothing. It's Mr. Vinny Paulino. Nothing.
Nothing.
It's kind of how you want it.
Nothing.
Nothing?
Couldn't get an endorsement for Dog Catcher.
Do you want that? I mean, is that a thing you'd want?
Not even for friend?
Not even for friend. Definitely not for friend.
Definitely not for friend. Well, let me tell you how I feel about Joe Rogan.
How do you feel about Joe Rogan?
He's a nice guy. I got no beef with Joe Rogan. What do you never did anything to me?
That was a big build up for nothing.
Yeah. Apparently, at least he didn't endorse me for hell or something like really messed up. Either way, it's the Carlson Cast. We're excited to have our guest in studio today, Miss Tammy Pescatelli.
Yeah.
Two-time finalist.
Yes.
Last Comic Standing. Multiple appearances on late shows.
Many, many.
Comedy Central. We're going to talk to her about a lot of things today.
Busy person.
We're going to talk to her about, you know, she's big on her family, has a big career, she's done TV, had her own pilot. She's done lots of things, and she's working her way back to TV, and she's playing comedy at the Carlson this weekend. So you get your tickets now. They are available. You could call 585-4-COMEDY or visit carlsoncomedy.com for those. Now, if you are a Tammy Pescatelli fan, which I'm sure a lot of you are, feel free to text in your questions. The text line is open, 585-484-0265. I got to tell you guys, I'm very excited about something that's happening at the club.
Oh boy.
What is that?
Is it free shrimp night?
If there was a free shrimp night, I'd camp out here.
That only happened one time and Benny ruined it for everyone.
I don't know. Yeah. This is a free shrimp kind of town. I think you'd have some competition.
Yeah. Hit my screen for me there. We have a big show, one night only, coming up on one of the holiest of holidays, St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, dear.
We're going to have a good time. Guess what's happening? Grilling JR Live, the legendary voice of pro wrestling.
That is going to be
Mr. Jim Ross is going to be here. By God, it's going to be a slobber knocker. featuring Jim Ross and Conrad Thompson, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, one night only. We are really bringing this up because AEW, All Elite Wrestling,
who he
company.
Works for, his employer.
His employer. You can get off of my computer now. That's cool. His computer, my computer, his company, AEW, is coming to Rochester the night after. So there could be lots of fun shenanigans that have not been announced happening at Comedy at the Carlson.
Could be some magical drop-ins.
There might be some magical drop-ins.
Now, is this, besides Tammy Pescatelli, I don't want you to pick favorites. Is this your favorite thing that's ever come to the Carlson? Is this your favorite Carlson event? It's up there, right? It's in the top something.
Top five.
Sure.
Yeah.
Top five.
Other than the aforementioned free shrimp night.
Yes. Right. Free shrimp night, Tammy Pescatelli.
By the way, there is no free shrimp night, just so you guys know.
Tossing a little Dolph Ziggler.
There's already a line outside.
I don't want people calling up Mark saying, the podcast said it's going to be a free shrimp night.
Let me tell you how free shrimp night would look for me. I would be like a pelican with my mouth open. Shove it with a bucket, just toss a fish at me, catching them.
That visual.
Yeah, there is a visual. Some of you are just listening to the podcast, but we are available as a video show on YouTube and Facebook Live. And those of you watching us on Facebook Live, God bless your souls. Yep. We're glad to have you. So text line is open. Tammy's going to be here in just a few minutes. Brian, you are emceeing all weekend.
I am.
Don't let that stop you from coming to the show, folks. It's going to be a good time.
Tammy, she's a joy.
She is a joy. I got the pleasure of watching her set last night, and I have to say, I was impressed.
She's very, very good.
Very commanding stage presence. Mm-hmm. It was a fun show to watch. So we're going to be back in just a few minutes. We're going to talk about the upcoming shows here at Comedy at the Carlson, and we'll be joined by Tammy Pescatelli and hopefully some of your questions coming up next.
Hey everybody, lots of really cool shows coming up here at Comedy at the Carlson. Check us out at carlsoncomedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY. We have this weekend, Tammy Pescatelli, tonight and tomorrow night. Tickets are still available. Make sure to get those quick. And in the Rickles room tonight, we have Maddie Smith and Andrew Schiavone on January 24th. And next weekend, Jimmy Schubert, January 31st through February 1st. And Joelle Nicole Johnson on February 6th through the 8th. And February 13th through the 15th, Takara Williams will be here. And Drew Michael on February 20th through the 22nd. On February 27th through the 29th, we have Jade Catapretta. And Jamie Lissau's back on March 5th through the 7th. We have Joel James March 6th and 7th in the Rickles Room. And Faison Love will be here March 12th through the 14th. Ada Rodriguez March 19th through the 21st. And the Sklar Brothers are going to be back April 2nd through the 4th. Make sure to get your tickets quick for that one. And Earl David Reed April 16th through the 18th. And April 23rd through 25th, Adam Ray. Ryan Nymiller, April 30th through May 2nd. And Mike Dambra, 15th and 16th of May. Come see us at a show. Again, go to carlsoncomedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY for your tickets.
You gonna switch it? There you go. There you go.
Hey.
My camera guy panicked, Tammy.
Well, I thought that I looked the best I've ever looked, quite frankly, for those 10 seconds of blackout.
I think that's the opposite reason why he panicked. He's like, there's a lady here.
Oh,
he
I don't know all, if I'm a lady.
He got all verklempt. So funny. I would recommend you maybe move that mic just a little bit
where
closer.
Where should I put it? I should put it close. How's this? That. Is this all right? Is this okay? How's this? How about there? How about here? Is this all right? How about right here? Get a shot of this. How come you're not cutting to this? This is funny.
Because he's panicking.
How about this? Is this okay? Oh, God, that's harsh lighting.
Yeah.
We don't like that. What, is that camera?
That's the one we're going to switch.
Please get rid of that shot. That's a horrible shot.
So how about this?
That
how about
make
we all
me jump off a bridge? Shot.
How about we all say good morning to Tammy Pescatelli? Brian, let's say good morning to Tammy.
Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning.
How do Proper. You have the good light? Thank you. Do not use this ever again. This is going to destroy my career. This camera is not going to work for my career.
Well, wait till they hear the interview.
That's horrible.
It's really nice to have you back in Rochester.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on your program. This is a program, you realize, right?
This is a program. Program, I like
to say. A pilgrim?
Program.
Program. Okay.
We are glad to have you here. Now,
I'm not kidding. Turn this away. I'm going to turn it away. I don't want to see this anymore. This is not a good one. This is what you're going to get. You didn't listen to me. Don't cut to that.
My face hurts. My soul hurts. My everything hurts this morning.
You're
no stranger to this town, huh?
No. I've been here millions of times, I feel like.
You have family here.
Family here. My good sister-in-law lives here with my brother and my niece and nephew and her family. So, yeah, lots of...
I find it interesting that you say your sister-in-law before you say your brother. Do you prefer your sister-in-law
to
your brother?
No. It's just that it's her family that's from here. Yeah. So when he, you know what I mean? Yeah. I used to say that she's from here and they didn't live here. So I think I'm used to just saying it like that, you know, but... Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
She's a nice girl.
She is a good girl. Yeah. I love her. She's great.
But you're not from very far from here. You're originally from Cleveland, right?
Yeah. Originally. And now I'm even closer because now we're in Pennsylvania.
I didn't know that. What part of Pennsylvania are you in?
Northwest Pennsylvania, in between Erie and Pittsburgh. When I got pregnant 11 years ago, it wasn't as open as it is now, like where, you know, Ali Wong is doing specials, pregnant and everything else. That's amazing. When I got pregnant, my agent said, don't tell anyone. He's like,
really?
Yeah, he goes, no one will want to book you. You know, oh, that's good that you have your phone on in the middle of your.
I'm going to fire everyone today, starting with me.
You fire yourself. You're fired. I'm taking over. Get up. If I could get up out of this couch, I'd come over and take that chair.
You want to see Craig really panic. You do that. You go ahead and do that. When you saw that Ali Wong, after living through somebody telling you hide that you're pregnant, and you saw that
Ali Wong
special,
I was proud for her. Like, this is what it's supposed to be, because I used to joke about it in my act, but I said at that stage of the game, most female comedians, their wives had their babies for them. Like, they didn't have. There was no, and it was a joke, but there was no precedent set. I had no one to look to. People go, well, what about Joan Rivers? Well, Joan Rivers was Joan Rivers. She was a legendary status.
Yeah.
There was nobody that was a real working road comic that had a female comic that had a baby. And I couldn't find anybody to talk to about it.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, we'll just hide it till I'm 6 months pregnant. And then I'll move to PA to try to have the baby and get it together. We'll come back. And then we got a TV show that kind of landlocked me to the town based on me being a wife, mother, and a comedian and leaving LA and being around my family. And then by the time that was over, my husband loved the town and my kid. You know, I have to get on a plane anyway to go
right.
places.
Yeah.
But now you can play the East Coast a little easier.
Yeah, but regardless, no matter where I go, whether like I just was in London, I still have to get on a plane. So yeah. It doesn't matter whether I'm in LA. And the good thing about living in a small town is my parents moved there and my brother and sister-in-law used to live there. So there was family there to get us started. You know?
Man, that's just amazing. It sounds like you had to run away and hide to have your baby. Like you got knocked up in the 20s.
Almost, yeah. Almost. It kind of was like that. They didn't want people to know. I wasn't even allowed to tell people I left LA. I just was supposed to say I was on the road and then go back every 6 weeks or so. Yeah, jeez. It was crazy. It was a different.
So like when you came back to LA with the baby, were people like,
well, I didn't go with the baby.
Why ever?
No. Mm-mm, he's never been there. But that's only too because I also didn't. That was another part of me leaving. We're really good friends with Paulie Shore and and my husband is a comic. Like we both have our names up on the Comedy Store walls. There's very few couples that were like, you know, me and Tom and his wife and Sigour and his wife. But like, I didn't want my son to be that. I didn't want him to be a baby in the bucket in the back room where comics were blowing weed in his face. You know what I mean? Like I didn't. I was one of the first ones to have that. Now they all have kids. It would be easier, but at the time it was.
It was
not
very
a
much a nightclub business at the time.
Bonnie McFarlane had to do the same thing. She moved with Rich over to the East Coast. They lived in New Jersey.
Yeah.
You know?
I got to ask you this. So you've been in Pennsylvania ever since.
Right.
And when you are concentrating on doing a family and the world of entertainment is so far away, did it feel more challenging to you? Or was it like a relief to be away from there because you were more established already?
A little bit of both. I don't think I could have done it earlier. I wouldn't have been able to continue a career. But first of all, immediately within a year, I sold a TV show about that I was the creator and executive producer about that exact situation. That was called A Stand-Up Mother. So within a year and a half, I have a show that's being filmed at my house that was on... I mean, it was a fledgling network at the time, that carried me through the first couple years. And then I had my special, and I'm a monologist. Like, I've never been cast. A lot of comics get cast in a lot of things. I've never been that person. I've made all my money standing up in front of people and having them consistently pay a ticket price. So it didn't seem, it's really much more attainable than you think, because regardless, I have to be somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have to be somewhere. You weren't going out for musicals or anything like that.
No,
yeah.
I mean, I'm a comic. That was the beauty of moving to Los Angeles. I moved there as a comedian. So they could either give me something or not. It didn't matter because they weren't going to take anything away. I wasn't going to get less funny. I was already an established comedian. So everything I did from that point on, which took a lot of pressure off of me, was only going to help me continue to be a comic. I was a comic for 7 years before I did anything. My first television – oh, I'm sorry, hitting the mic. My first television appearance was The Tonight Show.
Was it 2003-ish?
Yes, it was 2003.
Yeah.
So it was right after Montreal.
Right. I remember that. So you had an interesting start, though, in comedy. You were doing morning radio, right?
No. Same time. I did an open mic night that was sponsored by a radio station.
Okay.
And they hired me to do the morning show. And so I was like a sidekick. And then my guy quit and it became my show. But meanwhile, I'm doing open mics. I'm becoming a house MC. I'm bringing comics in on Friday and interviewing them and then taking the ones that were cool out to breakfast to talk to them so that right away when I quit the radio station, I hit the ground running as an opening act for a lot of people. Yeah. And I was lucky enough to start at a chain, a Funny Bone, that at the time had 13 clubs plus some of the improvs. So I worked my first year. No, I didn't make any money. but I worked. I've always worked. I've never had lulls where it didn't happen. I just had to figure out downtimes.
And you went into it with an education and some connections, and
to whatever degree you can have connections, whatever degree comics are at connections.
I'm gonna say that's some pretty rarefied air that you're breathing there, because not a lot of people who start off in open mics get picked up to do radio right out of the open mic. That's not something that happens often.
It was weird. I've always been blessed with a lot of great opportunities, but then suffered all my indignities publicly. Right?
I'm with you.
So it's better to suffer your indignities privately. Like, you know, people are upset about being called names on social media. When you do radio and you make a mistake, back then they used to just immediately call you, "You're an idiot!" And you just hang up on you and you're like, "Oh my God!" You know?
Well, so let's backtrack here. How do you feel like radio kind of affected your, you know, your stand-up? Did you feel like they were kind of complementary to each other? Or did you feel like they were two completely different animals?
At the time, they were two completely different animals, because they, you know, they had you under the gun. They hired me to be funny, but then it became a job. Then I had to do news. Then I had to bring up, you know, intros and learn how to run the board. So it wasn't. What it was good for, though, is that it allowed me a little bit of a space to make the mistakes, because I had the money from radio, so I could do all the open mics. I could be a house MC when it didn't pay anything. I had a real job. Right. And now those were actually decent radio days, you know?
Those were the days.
Long gone. I had a free leased car. I would go out and do, you know, I'd do, what do they call, like the promotional things when they'd go out. Because I was young back then. Think about it. I was 23, 24-year-old girl, so I'd do those live remotes. People wanted to hang out with me. The only hard part was, is at the radio station, I wasn't the most popular inside the building, because people had worked hard to be on the radio. They'd went to broadcasting school. They'd worked nights and weekends. Yeah. And I just walk in on a morning show. Oh my God, they were so mad.
After a couple of bar sets. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. So let's backtrack even further, because I'm more fascinated by this. I love a good origin story.
Well, let me tell you something. The GM that found me is now the vice president of iHeartRadio. So he always had foresight. He's picked some pretty amazing people in his career. Yeah. So, I mean, not that I'm so great, but I'm just saying his foresight was better than mine.
Well, maybe, but he certainly didn't do much for the stock price.
I just was telling you, I don't know anything about stocks. I've been a comic for 25 years. I buy 2 comic books a week. That's what I did, because I knew my friends were getting, like, they were getting 401ks and SEP IRAs and all these things when I was a comic. I'm not making. So I thought, I know the comic books are worth something. So I bought 2 comic books a week for over 25 years.
Did you just say to the guy at the comic shop, "Give me 2 that are"?
Well, at the beginning, I just went to the ones that I could afford. You know, I just buy basics. And so now I have, like, I don't know, I have like 20,000 comic books.
That's wild.
Wow. Yeah, so hopefully.
Is your kid allowed to touch them?
We've taken some out to read. He needs to understand how amazing they are, but some of them he can't. Like, I don't know what it's worth. And, you know, I don't know if any of them are worth so much now. I put them, they're at a box at a bank, because I don't want to leave him in the house. You know?
Good idea.
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, his friends will be over. And then I only have 1 number one. I have a number one of, oh my God, I can't think of what it's called. The Nicolas Cage, he played the guy in the movie, Skull.
Oh, Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider. No,
Really? Yeah, that's probably Johnny, we could go really nerd. We go Johnny Blaze or Dan Ketch, but I'm a real nerd.
That's the only. So I'd love to get it priced out. You know, maybe it'll be his college money, maybe it'll just be a nice pool in the backyard, above the ground Big Lots pool.
Shout out to my man Chuck at All Heroes Comics. He could probably help you out and give you some pretty good price.
I'll bring him here. We'll do it on air. We'll do our own comic book events, since
that guy would adore that. He would love that. But let's talk about comics and comedy and you. When did you first step on a stage? Like, how old were you when you first decided to actually attempt to do stand-up?
I was 22.
22. And you just decided one day I could do this, or was it something you were always into?
You know, they're dropping stuff all over behind us. You hear that?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I think it's apocalyptic. I think people are, I don't know what just happened. Was that the fall of the Berlin Wall back there behind us? I don't know what that was, they're dropping
No,
stuff.
They're actually building a new one. Yeah. What's going on out there? It's construction. So
listen, I've always been a smart mouth. I was always very, very, very sarcastic. My mouth is what got me in trouble all the time. I grew up with very strict parents. I never, you know, stayed out late. I never did any of that stuff, but I'd always say something very sarcastic. And I used to say that, like, my brothers would, we used to physically fight because, you know, that's what boys girls say. But they got stronger and faster than me, but they could never outrun my mouth. So I used to always do that. You know, I used to, they could punch you and it would hurt, but I'd try to say something that would sit with them till the next Tuesday. Oh, you know what I mean? Like, I was trying.
My hair does look stupid.
Insidious. Like, where I'd want them to come back a few days later and go, do I really, you know, do I really spit when I talk? Or, you know what I mean?
Bruises heal faster than egos.
I know that's horrible, and I went to therapy to fix it. Trust me. I didn't realize that I didn't use my powers.
It's a hell of a defense mechanism as a kid, though.
So I loved stand-up.
Okay.
Loved stand-up. I don't know what it was. It just always gravitated. I snuck the Eddie Murphy tape in my house and pulled a sleeping bag over my head and went in the back of my closet, and I had a push-button tape record and was listening to it and learned it verbatim. However, I didn't come from a lot of laughter. Like, Italian people in my house, they were pretty serious, you know, like, until all the relatives were around. Then that's a big group of people.
That's such an interesting observation, because I come from an Italian family too, even though I don't look like it. But yeah, things are very serious until they all get together.
When they're all together, they laugh and joke and whatever. But in the house,
it was so damn
not
loud.
A lot of, it was not a lot of laughter. There was no joking around. If you joke around, you get hit with the whatever's the closest thing, whether it's a loaf of bread, whatever they would hit, you know. So I didn't come from a lot of that. And I don't know why I never thought that I could be a stand-up comic. But my parents, when I had graduated from college, moved to Davenport, Iowa. It's a place called the Quad Cities. It was Davenport, Iowa, Bettendorf, Iowa, Moline, Illinois, and Rock Island, Illinois.
Yeah,
Quad
that's
Cities.
Not a fun part of the country.
It's, you know what? It's not bad. It's a great little area. It's this little haven. It's 2.5 hours from St. Louis north. It's about 3.5 north of St. Louis. 2.5 west of Chicago.
Yeah.
They have a great little culture there. It's really nice, but I knew no one. Mm-hmm. And so when you're like, I had the summer before I went to do my internship. I have a degree in fashion. My boyfriend and I had broke up. We had been together since we were 16. You know, I didn't know what to do. When you're 22 years old and you're only living in a place for 3 months.
Yeah.
And I didn't know a soul. Like, that's a hard age to not know anybody. So they had a comedy club, and I thought, I'll go there. I'll wait tables, make a little bit of scratch, get to see a couple shows, and then I'll be out of here. And I ended up, within the first couple weeks, there was a woman that came through, and she was an MC, because, you know, it's the three, the standard three-tier show, headliner, feature, MC. And
or this weekend, we call it headliner, feature, Brian.
Aww.
You need a little honk. Womp, womp, womp.
He's cross with me today.
He's so funny. I want to get into that. What's exactly going on? What's the problem?
I tripped over a cable and I upset him.
You broke something.
Like I just did with your camera?
Actually, that camera.
Well, that's a horrible angle. That's okay.
Well, yeah.
It's also the lighting here. This lighting only favors you.
Well, it's
carefully designed as such.
It's a long story, but I will tell you this. Brian screwed everything up. It's his fault. And don't put me on the spot on
next
this.
Next time I come here, I'm going to bring my own amber lighting to come, you know, it's going to cover myself. Not an amber alert, but an amber lighting.
Amber lighting. She's missing.
Yeah.
She's missing.
Trust me. I just taped my special at my old high school, the one that's coming out March 17th, and an amber alert went off twice in the middle of it. Even when people had their phones off, it overrides it, right? And I can make anything funny. but you can't make an Amber Alert funny. Like, I literally had to just kind of stop. Like, you can't, because
yeah,
then you lose
like a
the
challenge.
Whole,
I don't know
right?
if it's impossible.
Like, you lose the whole audience. Like, what kind of, like, I'm already doing it in front of people who knew me before puberty and my old vice principal and teachers and everything else, let alone if I start mocking, hey, a kid's missing, woo!
When the second one went off, did you say, Jesus Christ, did they find that
well,
kid yet?
No, I was like, how many kids are they going to take? Like, haven't they learned their lesson with one?
The kids around this town must be hot. So hold on a second.
So
I need to backtrack. Your special that's coming out, you filmed at your high school?
Yeah, my old high school.
You know April Macy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was in here maybe a month or two ago, and we were talking about her vengeance dream on the world is to film a special in her high school.
Yeah, she knows that because we have the same manager. So she knows my special was at my high school. We talked about that before.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, she would go. Hers is a different thing because hers, my, you know, mine is called
hers
The Way After
vengeance,
School Special. Like, right. She, yeah.
No, The Way After School Special.
Yeah.
That's a great name.
The whole title was Why Go Big When You Can Go Home. Like, I think it's hard. Like, I think it's amazing that all these people go huge. I went to see one of my best friends, Sebastian, go play Madison Square Garden, and I cried like a lunatic because I was so proud of him. But I also thought, you know, it's just as hard to try to go back in front of people who have preconceived notions of who you are before you ever put two jokes together, you know? So I thought, let's give that a shot. And it's very Napoleon Dynamite-esque, and I love it. I love it. There's a podium on the side. And trust me, there's some dancing.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
The flags on the stage. It's all that whole thing.
So that's coming out on St. Patrick's Day, March
17th? St. Patrick's Day. Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that
crazy?
Put that on the calendar. I didn't pick it. I didn't pick the date. That's the label. But, yeah. And I think what it's going to do first, get this, it's going to be up on, like, iTunes and Amazon before it hits any of the streaming services.
Yeah.
Really?
It's weird. Yeah, I guess it's changing. Every couple of years, the whole dynamic changes unless like Netflix is producing your special. I produced it myself. So.
Cool.
So.
Anyway, I saw a woman on stage. I went home. I said, I could do that. And I said it out loud. And my brother said, no, you can't. And then it was a challenge. I said, give me $50. I bet I can do this. And that was it. I did an open mic, and there's the radio station, and there's the story, and that's how it all comes together.
And you
together.
Made $50.
And I made $50.
What'd you do with the $50? That's what
Who
we all want to know.
What I did with that $50. Back then, I probably bought 5,000 drinks for $50.
So you got into comedy as a rebellion in
kind
general.
Of. It was so weird. It was almost like that moment when the teenage girl realizes her boyfriend's a vampire. Like, what are you? I just realized, I'm like, I can do this. I just never thought, as much as I love stand-up, it just never clicked. Because I, at the time, didn't see anyone who looked like me doing it. I didn't see, every woman that I saw was like older, talk about her facelift, her sequins, or nondescript in their gender. So I never, I mean, and now that's exactly who I am. Now I'm talking about, like, I wish I could get a facelift. You know, I don't
You're
like
telling
sequins.
Me. You're telling me. So here we are in 2020.
25 years later.
And the business is completely different.
Completely. But what? Not for me.
Why is that?
Because the business favors the young. So all these great things that are happening for women, which I'm thrilled for them, are only happening for the younger generation. And no one's looking for a 50-year-old woman. You think I'm going to get a sitcom? No one is thinking to give me a sitcom at this point. You think I have all these great ideas? I now know who I am more than I've ever known who I am. I mean, you've seen my act. Like, I am who I am. I'm Popeye, basically.
Yeah.
But no one's thinking of, like, it just doesn't work that way.
I just feel that maybe that's a little jaded of a perspective. And I know that you're living it. But I'm just saying that, like, you know.
It's easy to say. You're here in Rochester with a TV show on a regular basis. I'm telling you, it's no one. There's a million
you
people.
You want to trade?
Think how many 50-year-old women in comedy you see on TV.
Well, I was going to say Roseanne.
She's not 50, and you can only name one.
Right.
You can name 72 men right now.
Yeah.
I guess my point was with the amount of streaming services out there and the amount of production happening at any given time
in America, you would think.
Fill the thousands and thousands of hours on all of these stations.
I would think so, right?
I'll produce your show.
Yeah? What do we? I have a great idea.
You're just going to have to agree to whatever camera angles I decide on.
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, that's probably half the problem. They don't want to deal with that. Like when I did my the special, I was like, no butt shots, man. Nothing from the back. I don't want any kind of, there's no need for that. You're 20 years too late.
Ixnay on the asset.
Right.
Well, that was why my pilot failed. It was like, I only wanted shots.
That's it, just ass shots.
Nobody.
That was the name of it, isn't it?
Ass shots and muffled voices.
Glad I never saw the sequel, Rimshot. That's the other one.
Let me tell you something about Rimshot. It has a cult following. It has a cult following. What's your good idea? Do you want to share it or no? You want to keep it close to the vest?
Well, no. It's just I want to do a show about my real life. I just, right now my husband had a stroke and he owns a mechanics garage. I didn't realize that it was in trouble. So I had to go while he was recovering from his stroke, run the mechanics garage. And I don't know anything about it. It was kind of like it was a snippet of, I felt like Marissa Tomei and my cousin Vinny, you know, trying to learn about positive traction and all this kind of stuff. And we have, you know, putting him together, I joke about him being the hot kid from the slow class, but he's really not my intellectual equal. And those things are really very apparent as we get older as parents. And my son is growing up and he's smarter than him already. So trying to have a normal kid in the midst of all of it. And when you go to the mechanics garage and you have me running the mechanics garage, which is, again, real life.
One, two, three, four wheels, all good.
Right. You know? We have a mechanic that's, he's too big to fit underneath the car anymore. He like got so heavy. He's like my big pussy of, you know, The Sopranos.
Has anybody been cast in that part yet?
Yeah, right. He's just too big to fit underneath the car. So he's like the best mechanic from afar. And I got another, I got another mechanic. These are all true characters in my life now. Another kid, he just got out of jail, but he's like Chris Tucker, but he keeps date. He has no kids, but he keeps dating women that we call them six or more because they have to have at least six or more kids for him to date them. I'm like, I don't know where you get these services from.
I'd call them six pack.
It's a very specific app.
Yeah, it's a really, so we just have a bunch of, and then my parents thrown in the mix. So it's just a lot of chaos, me trying to hold it together. So I think that would be an amazing animated show.
Great.
Yeah.
I just think that'd be an amazing animated show because then it doesn't matter how old I am.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been a show led by a strong woman in animation since Doria or whatever her name is. Daria.
Yeah.
Well, Dora. Dora the Explorer.
Yeah, they still have that. She's a strong female.
She's got a little monkey that goes with her. But
she's a trailblazer.
Like Daria, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think that would be perfect.
And like, I'm trying to think of other
Hello, Bill Burr. Hello, Bill.
F is for female.
He's
will
amazing.
Be the name of your show. So I find it really hard to believe that someone so experienced has that many problems trying to get content out there.
No one's really looking for it. You don't even know what we went through trying to, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think, first of all, I'm not in New York or LA. So
right.
People don't think of me, right? So they don't think of you. And then I think that they just really not looking for women of my, I don't want to, listen, I don't care how old I am, but I just, they're really looking for younger chicks. That you can say anything you want, but it's still, that's the society, the way it goes. It just is what it is.
Yeah.
It's depressing to think about.
Not really, because I don't care. I don't need them. It'd be depressing if I needed them.
You sell
it's
tickets.
Certainly not affecting my show, which is all, again, I control what I can control.
Yeah.
I mean, and I learned that from my lunatic family. All I can control is me, you know?
Yeah.
Can I throw in a plug for your feature act this weekend? He was really funny last night.
That's why I bring him.
Where'd you find
Colin,
that kid?
Colin Chamberlain. I found him in Pittsburgh. I found him on the side of the road. It was the weirdest thing. He was just laying
somebody
there.
So I got Brian.
It's the weirdest thing. I scooped him up. No, Pittsburgh. He opened for me in Pittsburgh. He's from Pittsburgh. And again, I only live an hour and a half from there. And he was the funniest person of his age group that I had seen in years. And that was about 4 years ago, and I take him almost every single place I go.
I feel like you actually have one of... I've seen a lot of people bring their features and stuff like that, but that kid was legitimate belly laugh funny, so...
Yeah, and...
It was good to see.
I love it. That's, like, a lot of people don't want to bring a really funny person, but the funnier he gets, it's better for me, because then I know... First of all, we're completely different, so mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. I mean,
yeah.
you know, it doesn't... But it pushes me to bring it to the next level. And I don't even mind, no matter who you are, someone's going to walk out and go to the feature, I liked you best. Like, it's a yeah. big secret. But I'd like to hear that for him. I probably won't have him very much longer. All he is like one late night appearance yeah. away from not being a feature act anymore.
And, too big for his britches, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. But yeah. good for him, though. I hope so. Yeah. I said, fine, get huge so I can open for you. I could care less.
Do you know what an amazing experience that's got to be able to work with someone like Tammy, who's touring the country playing real clubs? What experience you get middling that way? That's yeah. good on you for taking somebody that you believed in on the road with you.
Well, I just hooked up this young girl, Sarah Shipley, from here
uh-huh.
with the Funny Bone. She's actually working in Omaha, Nebraska right now, because she's also one of the funniest people I've seen in a long time. Yep. And hopefully she gets Sarah. In with that chain. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sarah did a show that I booked back in December and blew the roof off the place. She was fantastic.
She's phenomenal.
Yep.
I love everything she does. She worked with me the last time I was here. I kept thinking, I have Colin, and I have another guy, Ray Zawadny. Now, Colin and Ray we're gonna start a show on Sirius, and they're part of that with me, because my buddies, Jeff and Larry, are putting me on their channel on Jeff and Larry's Comedy Roundup.
Really?
Yeah. So
good for you. That's awesome.
Yeah, that'll
when
be fun.
When is that starting off?
Well, let's just say we're doing a test show just to make sure the first week of February, and then if it goes well, probably in March.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going
to say, we got
to
work the kinks out.
That if you do need a new opener, please take Brian with you.
Because you want him out of here.
Get him out of here, Taylor.
I'd be happy to.
Get him out of here.
I'd be happy to.
That's awesome.
Make both
He's
of
so
us
funny.
Happy.
I know you look for funny people. I'm just
teasing you, Brian. I'm just kidding.
Brian is very funny.
Yeah, he is funny.
He'd want you to especially take me on the gigs that are very far away.
It's so funny because I...
Where he could accidentally miss a bus, you know?
Right, so if I just be stuck out there. You know, I know so many people. When I was coming up, when I was a house MC and stuff, so many comics didn't want people. Like, I had to be cut down on time on so many shows because people were like, oh, we don't want you to be funny. We just do the MC. Just do the MC work on it. So
it's such a weird thing that people still do that.
Why would you do that? Don't you want... First of all, I want the challenge as the headliner to be able to push myself to be funny. But ultimately, want my audience to not feel like they got ripped off.
Yeah.
Because they just remember laughing. They don't necessarily... It doesn't have to be just me that they laugh at. Like, how ridiculous is that? Do you only have one good-looking model in a fashion show? You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a good analogy.
That's a really good analogy. Yeah. It never really sat right with me either, because, like, what is the point? What is the MC doing with this seriousness? Try the potato skins? Like, would you rather have your audience laughing?
Well, when I was a kid, coming up in it, a kid, but they told us, these were the rules that the improv had back in 1994. This woman, Sarah Nye, ran all of the improvs. But the good news for me was she was out of Cleveland, because I moved back home to Cleveland and lived downtown. She said, the MC, your job is not to be funny. Your job is to do the announcements, move the show, keep the audience off the stage and guard the mic, and don't say fuck. Am I allowed to say that on the show?
You can say whatever the hell you want on the show.
Okay, good.
Which is such a terrible...
But that's what the MC's job truly is. You're the host of the show.
But that's such a terribly stifling thing to do to a performer, to a comic who's trying to, like, learn to do well. Those
that's
are very
where
basic
she
things.
Said that's not where you learn.
You learn in the middle spot.
You learn in the middle spot, or you learn at an open mic. You don't learn when someone else is paying tickets, paying money to see somebody else. It's not a job that you learn. Like, that's what she kept saying. Like, your job is not to... This isn't about you. These people paid to see somebody else. This is what you do. You do the time I told you to do. Do your few jokes that I approved. And then you want to expand and you want to grow. Come to the open mic night. go start your coffee shops, do whatever. But here, this is a professional show, and you're going to do the job that you were paid.
And I'm not arguing that point, but what I'm just trying to, what I'm trying to explain is like, hey, I'm working on my material. Can I throw in this other joke? Like, people get very upset about that.
Well,
and you have to be very rigid when you're doing that. And the experience that you're getting, you may be learning how to handle the bases, but you're also not learning comedy, except for the public speaking part of it, which is very, very important. I guess
she didn't say don't do jokes. She was just saying, like, look, you don't go into the audience because you get the audience riled up.
Well, that you never go into the audience.
And how, you can never get them quiet again,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't say the F word as an MC because you don't need to. You've got you're the opening. What if nobody else says it, you know?
Yeah.
So there were just basics that were like, look, this is what your job is. I'm giving you this amount of time to work in front of this person to get 5 minutes, your 5 minutes tight. Mm-hmm. But really, this is what, that's a little bonus, you know? I mean, it wasn't like they were, that you told us we were the flight attendants on Southwest, throw a joke in while you're doing the exit strategy.
Yeah.
But, you know.
God, isn't that annoying?
Yes, it is. It drives me nuts.
In your opinion, what's the biggest, like, common mistake you see young comics, like, in 2020 doing wrong? Like, what are the things you see that are just not working, that seem to be prevalent?
The only thing that I would say is just selling merch before you really have something to put out there. Like, everybody's trying to sell merch, and I get it, because money, you need money, all
sure.
right? I never deny some, but you can't rip people off of their money, because then they always remember that. That's why I never let a heckler take my show. I think you've heard me say before, but like, when someone starts, I'm like, look, some people only get out one night, especially my demographic. I'm very in tune to my demographic. Like, they only get out once a month or something like that, you know? So you don't get to take the night that they paid to see me. Not some heckler or me deal with a heckler, and you're going to get hurt. And you only have one chance to get to make people feel like their money was worth it. Like, they will only come out once, maybe twice. If you're a big name and you didn't satisfy them the first time, you'll get half the audience back the second time. Like, anybody can sell out once.
Mm-hmm.
Big name, like a YouTube sensation, can sell out one time.
Yeah.
Thousands of tickets.
There's only so many one times at so many clubs.
If you don't give them what they need, only half will come back. And then by the third time, you're going to have to come back with a group.
Yeah.
Because you can't trick people out of their money more than once. You just can't.
I like how you deal with hecklers, too. You just shame them.
You just,
it's just, it was hilarious. The one person last night, it wasn't really heckling, but just being loud. You're like, everybody just ignore him. We're not going to pay any attention to him. Let's all look at it. Okay, now let's all just ignore him.
Right. I'm just like, I kind of go back to first grade, like when the kid was eating the paste. All right, we see you, Ricky, eating the paste. But
yeah, just don't encourage just him. Not, don't look at him.
Yeah. It's just going to go away.
Now, what's the dumbest piece of merch you saw on open mic or try to sell, Tammy?
Colin with his koozies. No, I'm just kidding. I love Colin's koozies. No, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've seen like MCs trying to sell their albums and stop.
Yeah.
Stop. It's, I get it. I understand what it need, you know. Maybe I sold the dumbest thing ever. I remember the first thing I ever sold merch-wise, which is actually pretty great, really. And I had these signs, you know, like, think about like a Baptist church fan, right? And it had a picture on one side with my name, but on the other side, it had like, you know, the cartoon comic book swear thing with the exclamation point, the and it was for while you're driving in a car, if someone cuts you off, you just lift up the paddle. I just have the big swear thing so people could infer their own swear words.
But that seems like a useful product.
It was a buck. Like, I was like, it wasn't ripping anybody off.
Right.
So what that I made it with popsicle sticks and cardstock paper. It doesn't matter. It was the idea.
They were made with love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sold for a dollar.
Yeah.
I love it. So, okay. It's 2020. I want to ask you this question. I know you got to get out of here. I know you have some family things and stuff going on today.
Yeah, it's okay.
If you were heading to start from scratch, like right now, like the way the business is now, where it is, where you've been, where it is now, if you had to start from scratch, where do you think you would even start? Where would you begin?
I would go to New York.
New York's the spot.
Yeah, and I would start a podcast immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately. The problem with me now, like people go, why don't you have a podcast? Because I have such a realistic point of view of myself that I don't, you have to have a little bit of hope or narcissism to start something like that, right?
Yeah.
And I am pretty realistic on what is and what isn't. So, you know, yeah. I think I definitely, I wish that in my career, I would have, I really wish in the early part of my career, I would have moved to Boston.
Okay.
Because that, those are some great attitudes of comics who came out of there. The Bill Burrs, the Bobby Kellys, the Lenny Clarks, the, you know, Gary Goldman. Those attitudes are spectacular. If I had it to do again, it would have been nice to live there a little bit. But eventually, all roads in comedy, if you're taking it to another level, lead to L.A. or New York.
Yeah.
So you have no choice, you know?
Okay.
I would have, I think I would have though, what I would have done different is in it starting. The very first time that I got money, that I got known after Last Comic in 2004, we had back then it was like 19 million viewers, which was a ton back then, right? Now you can get that in a podcast, but.
But they can't get it on network TV.
Right, it's weird, right?
Yeah.
We had 19 million viewers and it changed like on a dime, literally. We all got on flights to leave on a Thursday. It aired, or like on a Tuesday we left, and then it aired on Wednesday. And by the time we came home, everybody was recognizing us in the airport. It was crazy. I would have, I went on the road to make money. Mm-hmm. I should have stayed in LA and auditioned for things. That's, I probably should have done something like that where I could have done sitcom work or movie work or whatever, you know, but.
Why do you think you chose comedy? Because you, you want to be in front of these people.
Because I'm a comedian. Plus, no one listened to me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Whatever need I had for attention was long since satiated, and now it's just what I do. But no one listened to me. I had to get a microphone to get anybody to pay attention to me. You know, I'm lucky that I had morals and ethics, or I'd have been naked on stage somewhere. Although I did live in a stripper colony for a long time. That's another show I'd like to pitch.
The stripper colony?
I learned how to be... I was very... Think how tough I am.
Uh-huh.
I was very much more butch in my life without without the sexuality, because I grew up with all boys and then I was in this stand-up comedy thing with all guys. And then when I moved in to Los Angeles, I moved into what I call a stripper colony. It was like a 7-unit apartment building. There was me and a young upcoming attorney, and the rest were strippers in various stages of their careers.
Yeah.
So they kind of taught me how to soften up and be a girl. Huh. That's insane.
That is a sitcom.
That is a good show.
That's the new girls. We had a Magda.
Call it gals.
Right.
I don't know.
It was like we had a Magda. You remember from something about Mary? There was you know, like the stripper that you never want to see naked? And she was always naked. She'd go naked to get her mail. Like, she didn't care. She didn't realize how old and decrepit she was, because she was the one, like, you know.
Aren't buying anymore, you shouldn't give it away.
Right. I saw her. I saw every crack and crevice of her.
Of
right?
Old Magda.
Like, I mean, and by, I really mean that. Like, she had no idea that she wasn't attract, like, you know what I mean?
She's
just in her mind, she had reverse body dysmorphia. She thought everything was going well.
She's always dropping pennies in front of you and bending over.
Oh, she was crazy. Then and think that she and say little things. It's funny, Brian. She would say things like this, like, if, you know, you had a guy over, she would go, "I'm so sorry that I came over in my unawares." And I'm like, I was unaware of that.
Nobody talks like that.
Unaware.
Yeah, it was so cute. It was, then there was one.
You might have just needed to call that lawyer.
Oh, it was
get
so
a cease and desist.
He was so funny. He was like so out of it. But by the way, who's home on Mondays? Comics and strippers. So I always had someone to hang out with as long as I was willing to buy dinner. You know what I mean? It was like, so it was always... there was this one that looked just like Pamela Anderson. I mean, just spectacular looking beauty, but she was like an animal hoarder.
Mm.
Okay. I met her because she was posting up a sign of her lost bird. Like, you know, I'm like,
that
I go,
bird's gone.
You know, it's never coming back. Right. I go like this. And she would have, she had rabbits and but they, it literally, the rabbits weren't in a cage. They would just hop around and shit on the floor everywhere. Yeah. And like guys would, it was so much fun because I used to watch guys go up there with her and like be, you know, be so enamored of this beautiful mm-hmm. girl. But some of them literally couldn't bring themselves to stay because it was so, it stunk up there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was literally, I mean,
rabbit pee and poop.
Rabbits, turtles, dogs, cat, like she had every, I'm not lying to you. There was literally about 17 different species of animals up there.
Wow. Like, an outtake from Ace Ventura. Like,
probably. Yeah. Like crazy. There was another one that I called the environmental stripper because she had, she had one of the first, the old school, like golf cart electric cars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Remember those kind of thing? And she would ride it. They danced at Crazy Girls at the time. But she had giant G-size boobs. Mm-hmm. And she would pick up garbage along the way. And she had like one of those old sticks that would pick it up. And I'm like, if you do the wrong way, you're going to pop your boob.
G-sized boobs.
They were giant. I mean, G, that's what they called them, double Gs.
Those aren't very environmentally conscious.
Yeah, right, but yet she was. That's what's so funny, isn't it? Like you care about the earth, but not yourself. Yeah. Like it was insane.
She's hoping people colonize them.
Yeah, one girl.
So big they reduce the range on her little car.
Yeah, I've had. that's so funny.
So
yeah, if she popped them, she would never need. I mean, one overdosed. We had to bring her back to life. It was lots of insane. Their drug dealer was an 80s child star.
Like, ooh, can we guess? Can
off,
we guess
off air because I can't.
You don't have to say anything, but we all know
Danny Bonaducci. No, I can't. No. But it was, you know, I mean, literally some of the people I saw that would come home and, you know, I came home one day and Daryl Hannah was sitting on my stoop because she had just done a movie with them where she learned how to strip dancing at the iguana or the blue iguana or whatever. It was just crazy life.
So you walk home, Daryl Hannah's hanging out with...
I walk home and Daryl's sitting on my stoop because my house was in the bottom and we all became friends. I mean, it was just crazy... crazy life. If I one time I met this the one girl moves in, she never speaks, none of the other girls like her. I don't know how she was a dancer over there.
They all worked at the same place. Even Magda, or was Magda,
Magda
like, retired?
Didn't work anymore, but she would go to Hemet in Vegas. She told us she went to Hemet in Vegas. I don't know what she did there. But Hemet, it like is like where strippers go to die. Like that's kind of like, I don't know if she did like the Golden Buffet at like 4 o'clock, dance that. I don't know what. But the one girl, she wouldn't speak to any of us, right? And I was getting, like moving something in. I can't remember exactly what it was. It was like this big box. I'm trying to get in. And all of a sudden, she's walking down the driveway. She sees me. She does not pay attention to me whatsoever. Like she's leaving. And I'm like, thanks, bitch, for holding the door. Like, I didn't say it, but in my head, you know? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I see her boyfriend pull up. And she throws this bag at me. And he goes, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, I was just helping her move. I'm like, I don't know this girl. But I'm just like, okay. And I go, yeah, really? I go, yeah, take this in. And I make her help me carry it in. Well, she leaves with him, comes back later. She's like, oh, I was going, I'm heading... out to Saudi Arabia because I'm staying with a sheikh, whatever. And she's like, I'm taking my bag. And I open it up. There's like $10,000 in cash in the bag that the guy sent for her. And she's supposed to bring the money to him. Isn't that crazy? Just crazy stuff. She was obviously a prostitute.
Yeah, but like that's like human trafficking and stuff with some of these guys.
That was her choice. What are you talking about?
No, I'm just saying that like in some of those cases, they lure people with money. And then once you go there, you're stuck
there. By the way, she knew what she was doing.
Oh, I'm sure.
She was a prostitute. Many years later, she was still prostituting, but for way less money. So let's just say she's still doing it now, but she's not making $10,000 a bang. Okay, yeah. So she knew what she was doing. Those were her choices. Her body, her choice.
Oh, I'm not shaming. No shame here.
Yeah. No, but you just brought it down with human trafficking. I don't know that that's ever been a joyous conversation anywhere, buddy.
That just sums up my day. That's really what sums up my day.
We'll entitle this episode human trafficking and Amber Alerts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that, I I think that could be an amazing.
Yeah,
I would watch that
HBO type show
all day long,
because it really taught me how to be a girl. Like, I didn't. I used to do a joke about it. Like, I used to flirt like Joey from Friends. Like, how you doing? You know what I mean? Like, I always was a person to put all my cards out on the table. If I liked you, I'd be like, you know, I like you. Let's not beat around the bush. And they taught me the art of a little bit of, you know, that's what a whole stripper's thing is, to make you think that you could get it. Yeah. Right. And they taught me a little bit of that girl. I didn't grow up girly. My mother's mother died when she was 9. My mother didn't have any of those skills. She got married at 18, so I didn't know any of it. I also didn't know about thank you cards, but that's different. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't, you know, so I really was because of them that I think I was able to kind of chill out and learn how to be a girl to some degree.
Is there any particular lesson that sticks in your head?
Wash your money.
That's the
I saw money come out of places that you don't want to know.
So why are those money laundries illegal? They seem like they should be something we all have. Tammy Pescatelli's here all weekend, Comedy at the Carlson. There are 4 more shows this weekend. You can check out her. Brian Ball will be there, and Colin Chamberlain will be
me, CC,
yeah,
and TP.
I'm not sure where the joke is there.
It's no joke. You're BB.
Yeah, yeah.
Brian Ball.
Yeah.
Colin Chamberlain. And TP.
Yeah.
There's no joke. That's just initials.
Did anybody ever mess with you for the initials TP? Anybody ever like make toilet paper jokes at you?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. But I'm like, if that's where you're going and you see this nose, I mean, like, how dumb are you? Like, you're going to go for the TP joke when I got a toucan sand nose?
I love it. So come see Tammy this weekend. We're going to be back with stand-up news in just a minute. And stay tuned. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit carlsoncast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. Give it to me, Rosser.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's time for the news.
I didn't think you guys were really going to do that.
Well, on that note, somebody's dead again.
It's not Brian again, is it?
It's Brian again. He won't stay dead.
Yeah.
Like Rasputin.
Like Kenny.
Terry Jones.
Yeah.
Terry Jones. Sad. Yeah. No, this is a sad one. So he had been diagnosed a couple years ago with a progressive aphasia. So not 100% a surprise, but still very sad.
He aphasia was, the continent?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So he was 77. This is, of course, Terry Jones, one of the founders of Monty Python. He was in that comedy troupe for years. He co-directed Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Monty Python's Meaning of Life, solo directed Life of Brian. He also wrote books about Chaucer.
Yes.
He was a very, very
smart man.
Yeah, like smart, funny.
How would you feel if you wrote books about Chaucer and still people just walk up to you and go, "Nee!"
Yeah.
All the time. What a legacy.
When you put it that way, because I was like, oh, Chaucer, Holy Grail. I mean, those are, you know, I mean, you know, but yeah, when you, yeah, because you're right. People are just
the
like.
The body of work into context.
When you put the body of work into context.
Yeah. I wonder if, like, if there turns out to be a heaven and he winds up there, he's just going to be like, oh, sorry about Life of Brian. It didn't really mean all that. It was just a big joke.
I bet you he'd walk up to the gates and be like, is Brian here?
Yeah. Can I speak to Brian, please?
And they're like, Ball, no.
Brian, Ball, no. No, he won't stay dead. Yeah. See, we're trying. Yeah. We're trying. Yeah. John Cleese said a lot of nice things about him and then ended with 2 down, 4 to go. So I guess I'm gonna have a job for a few more years.
You know what though? That's really funny. God bless really him. Funny. Like that's them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So moving on, I got a couple of slightly political things. Mike Stack, you might not know this guy in New York, but Mike Stack is the former lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania.
Look at this dreamboat.
Right?
You know who he looks like? He looks like, what's that guy's name? Walton Goggins, but like less inbred.
Yeah. A little less.
He looks a little less inbred.
Those teeth.
Yeah.
Nobody in Pennsylvania has teeth that natural.
So he was...
I'm guessing veneer.
Although they're at a weird angle, aren't they? Or is that his mouth?
It's fascinating. Oh, it looks like he's got three front teeth.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Now that you get
close. Now you can't unsee that. There's three front teeth there.
And the one eye sort of down on one side. Yeah, okay. When you get close, it's sort of fascinating.
Yeah, if you're listening, watch the show.
So this is according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, although it was reported in a lot of places. So he left office in 2019 under a shadow of some alleged staff abuse type things going on.
Did he make him go to open mics?
Okay, you're not far off. So he's you're in the ballpark. So he's moved to California.
Is he going to be a star?
He's taken up stand-up comedy. He's now performing as Mikey Stacks. This is according to his former campaign manager, Marty Marks. So he's got a video on he's got like a demo reel on Backstage, the sort of LinkedIn performers. So this is a little bit of his act. I'll just give you a little bit of this. Says Mikey likes it, but you know what Mikey really fucking hates? It's our treasure, our jewels, our future. It's fucking teenagers. Cannot fucking stand them. And then goes on to complain about teens he saw in Starbucks using cell phones and ordering things like caramel cappuccino motherfucking ridiculoso. He doesn't like smartphones, teenagers, or people who spend too much time looking at their screen. Lots of swearing and...
Or people who report crimes, apparently.
Or people who report crimes. So,
Oh, my God. That's the last thing the world needs is, like, a former politician, new stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
That's a level of narcissist that should not exist.
We narrowly avoided it with Mike Huckabee.
I think also there's something...
I forgot about his show. You know what his show is on? I saw Mike Huckabee's television show. It's on the Christian's channel.
Yeah.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's on, like, the one that... has like the praise-a-thons.
He should go on tour with his daughter. That'd be sort of, I wouldn't go to it, but you know.
No, I'm good.
Now I'd like to turn things over to my lovely daughter. I'll fight every single one of you.
Every single one of you. I think for me, this story started with a 56-year-old who decided he was going to start going by Mikey Stacks, and then it just got better from there. So.
I shouldn't laugh at that. But stage names are the fucking funniest thing.
Yeah.
It's such a window into the soul of somebody who wants to be a performer. Oh, what's the name you went for? There was a guy we know who changed his last name, and we love him. I love him, but he changed his last name to Wild.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, that's what you would say.
Oh, sweetie.
Yeah. Love the guy, but Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, well, porn and comedy, I think those are two where you can learn a lot about someone by the name they choose. Yeah.
I always told you, I've said this a million times, but if I ever have a stage name, it's going to be something that, like, fits me. I'm going with Scott Bigham.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
That works.
That could be a comedy or a porn name. You're all set?
I like the way you think, Johnson.
What else do we have other than Mikey Stacks?
Okay.
I want Mikey Stack updates. I want Mikey Stacks updates. I want videos. Are there videos?
You know what? The video was described. I don't know if I can get something off Backstage without being subscribed, without
anything you could
find. So I will look. I will
anything
look on that.
You could find, post on the Carlson Cast Facebook page.
There were a lot
please.
Of descriptions of his comedy act. So I'll see if I can find an actual video.
Those included horrific. Unfunny. What is this idiot doing? Like, I'm just reading the reviews.
Okay, so we talk about a lot of comedians who've had, you know, Jerry Seinfeld talks about not wanting to work colleges because it's tough, and I guess Louis C.K., I'm not putting them in the same ballpark. But, you know, American comedians talk a lot about the issues they have with audiences.
Could you imagine Mikey Stacks in a college?
Oh.
Look at all your stupid phones and your stupid ridiculoso macchiatos.
The kids with the... phones and the CDs and the Smash Mouth.
The people who are in that audience are like, he's right.
He's totally
right.
Well, that is the kind of comedy that is timeless if you get the right audience. So, good for him.
The problem is that audience isn't timeless.
Yeah, they're going to die. That's good. They're going to be dead soon.
That's true. But new old people are always filling it.
You
so.
Made my day today. I'm going to laugh about Mikey Stacks.
I'm glad I could do it. All glad day. I could help. Things are a little different in Russia. Alexander Dolgopolov, he's a 25-year-old Russian comedian.
In Russia, college laughs at you.
That That's it. That's the story.
All right.
this is a quick one, but he made some jokes about President Vladimir Putin.
Always a good idea.
As well as the Orthodox Church.
Even better idea.
So you can probably see where this is going. He has fled the country. apparently, he was sounds like a nice kid. Seems like he was genuinely sort of surprised by this. But apparently, like a venue he was working, like the local constabulary showed up and were grilling the staff about him and asking patrons questions and sort of holding people aside. So he's left the country.
What? Let's just. Stop for a second and think about that.
Okay.
And count our blessings.
Yeah, right?
How about we count our blessings for 1 second? Because that's insane. I wish I had a comedy Gestapo so I could go to some of these open mics and have people dragged off the stage and beaten and thrown into a gulag. But I should not be allowed to have that power.
right.
Definitely.
No one should be allowed to have that power. So, I don't know what the jokes are.
Well, I have one, and this is the joke about Putin.
It's translated from Russian into English.
Right. But it's as tame as it could possibly be. He says, on the one hand, there are those who support Putin. On the other, there are those who can read, write, and reach logical conclusions. That was the Putin joke that has the country in an uproar.
I thought it was going to be something like, hey, if you're you when you're outside of the bathroom and you walk into the bathroom, what are you? You're Putin.
Yeah.
Eh. Like, I thought it'd be something like that.
Ladies
that would
gentlemen,
get them
Shane Bigham's.
Scott Bigham, everybody.
Scott Bigham, sorry.
I'll be here all weekend.
I'm Shane Bigham's.
He's going to catch mysterious radiation poisoning like a Chick-fil-A sometime
week. Yeah, well, that's the thing. And the being Russia, the authorities were like, yes, we're absolutely investigating this person. Yeah,
he cut his own dick and jumped off roof.
He has not said where he is. He has confirmed through Instagram that he is somewhere safe, although, as we know, the reach of Vladimir Putin is...
He's somewhere safe. Is he at the Firehouse open mic?
That's a little inside baseball.
Waka, waka, waka.
That's some local humor.
I'm a problem today.
So, finally, ending on a lighter note, this was a little story sent in by listener Vinny Paulino.
Never heard of him.
Eddie Murphy's been in the news a whole lot with the Dolomite Is My Name, for which he was shamefully denied an Oscar nomination, but
so is Rudy Ray Moore.
So is Rudy Ray Moore. So
the original.
Yep. So he described in a recent interview with W Magazine he was playing a comedy club in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, when he was 17 or 18, and got some what turned out to be pretty bad advice from a pretty smart legend. Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
Came up to him and said, "Hey, kid." Murphy recalls, I don't know where you're going to go with that. You know, the language and the race stuff. So 2 or 3 years later, Dangerfield and Eddie Murphy met again in the bathroom at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. They are standing
In line waiting to score Coke.
In line waiting to score Coke. Yeah. But stopping to pee, you know, on the way, as you do. You want to clear yourself. You want to make some room. Rodney Dangerfield just looked over at him and said, hey, who knew? So I guess
Rodney realized. That's great.
So Rodney realized.
I thought about this long and hard. I really did, because this is such a crazy story that, you know, Rodney Dangerfield, a guy who was pretty irreverent, but let's be fair. Was he? Rodney wasn't super out there on the edge.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, in the context of being a big name, sort of mainstream star in the 80s, I'm sure we remember him as being incredibly outrageous, but
he was crass.
Right.
Yeah.
Crass could be a good word to describe
loud,
him.
But wasn't like,
but he was also on Johnny Carson, you know, like it was a different mindset. And also this was probably, I don't know Rodney Dangerfield personally, obviously, but I don't know that this was a, hey, stop doing that. This is terrible. I'm offended. It might've just been like, hey, if you want to make it big, maybe this isn't what you do.
That's pretty much what I was thinking. Is that it was more of along the lines of, you have to take it into like account for the fact that Rodney was a not quite middle-aged white guy trying to tell a very young black kid how to do his act.
Yeah,
right.
Is not never doesn't sit well in general.
What's with all the black stuff? Yeah,
right. But then you think, you know, like Rodney is probably in his advice for what Rodney's career was exactly correct. Rodney couldn't do that stuff.
Yeah.
So I mean, I just thought it was an interesting story about how wrong we could be sometimes, even though we know what we're doing in so many aspects of our lives.
Well, and that advice...
Stay in your own lane.
Yeah, stay in your own lane. And that advice might have been, you know, the advice, just the general advice of, like, you know, tone it down, pitch it to a little different audience. Mm. That might have been fine for, you know, there's one Eddie Murphy. There's one Rodney Dangerfield, but there's one Eddie Murphy. So that advice might have been fine for a whole lot of other people.
Yeah.
It was obviously not what was going to make Eddie Murphy a star. So
solid point. Solid point. I enjoyed both of your company today.
Well, thank you.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
Are you talking to Ross and Joe?
No, I was talking to Craig and Joe back there.
No, sure.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Craig and Joe, nice work. Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the show. We hope that you've enjoyed it. Please remember to rate and review. Tell a friend, do all that good stuff. And until then, act right. We'll see you next time.